Right. I think we're going to start now, even though I said we'd give it a minute, but actually we haven't. But we'll do a bit of revision before we start last week. Yeah. Did you enjoy last week?
Yes.
Has it kept you awake all week? No? Good. Just a few people. Okay. But we're going to start off, as we will every single week in these lectures, by doing just a bit of revision. So last week we looked at these things. We looked at the nature of argument first, and who's going to be prepared to give me the definition of argument? How are we defining argument? You can look at your notes if you must.
I'm just remembering words. There was a premise, or possibly more than one premise, followed by a conclusion.
Right, we didn't mention words, either premise or conclusion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When we defined it. You've got it in front of you, have you?
A sentence being asserted on the basis of the evidence.
That's right. An argument consists in a sentence that's being asserted, it consists in a set of sentences, one of which is being asserted on the basis of the others. Do you remember?
Yeah.
So an argument is a set of sentences, one of which is being asserted on the basis of the others. And we looked at what it was to assert a sentence. What else can we use a sentence for apart from making an assertion?
Question?
We can use it to question. So instead of saying, shut the door, I can say, is the door shut? What else can we do?
A declaration?
We can use it as that would be an assertion, really. The door is shut. Okay, we can also command, shut the door. We can do lots of things with sentences. We can reassure, the door is shut, etc. Okay, but an argument is a set of sentences, one of which is being asserted, which is expressing a belief, on the basis of the others. We also learned some basic terminology. Let's go to that one. So, yes, you had the terminology right. So the sentence being asserted is called?
Declaration.
The conclusion, that's right. And the sentences on the basis of which the one is being asserted are the?
Premises.
Well done. Okay, and how do we distinguish arguments from other sets of sentences? I mean, there are lots of sets of sentences, aren't there? Here's a set of sentences. The chair is blue. The lady's wearing purple. He's got a red folder. She's got a red folder,
Is it true that?
How can anyone remember what the is it true that frame is a test for? It's a test for declarative sentences, that's right. If you want to know whether a sentence is being asserted or is a declarative sentence, you put it into the frame, is it true that? And it should make a grammatical sentence. Okay, so a set of sentences is an argument only if...
Connections.
They're connected.
They're connected as... They might be connected in all sorts of ways. They might be being connected in that they're all true, or that they're all false, or that they're all about me, or all sorts of ways of connecting sentences. What is it about a set of sentences that connects them, that makes them an argument? That's right, whoever said that, I can't remember. It's one is being asserted on the basis of the others. So one of them is the conclusion, the other the reasons being offered for the one. Okay, how did we do we think that something like if the cat is in the bedroom, it will have ruined the duvet? This is a heartfelt sentence. If the cat is in the bedroom, it will have ruined the duvet. Is that an argument?
No.
Why not?
Conditional.
It's a conditional, that's right. I'm not asserting either of those sentences, am I? I don't know either that the cat's in the bedroom or that it's ruined the duvet, and I'm not asserting either of those as a belief, so that's not an argument. Good, okay. Why is argument important? This is an easy one. Well, at least I thought it was an easy one. Why is argument important? Why are you here? You're here presumably because you want to learn about argument. Why? We need it to convince others. So do you remember that argument I had up last week about Jim and Lynn? we're talking about neutrinos and whether they move faster than the speed of light in a vacuum. And Jim just asserted the sentence, didn't he? And by doing so, didn't persuade anybody of anything. So arguments are important because it's by means of them that we can persuade, that we collaborate in pursuit of truth. So if you believe one thing and I believe another, I want to know what your reasons are for believing what you believe, and you want to know what my reasons are for believing what I believe, because we both want to have true beliefs. And it's only engaging in argument that we're going to collaborate in pursuing the truth. And then at the end, if you remember, we considered the nature of truth and reason. And we made a bit of a start on the actually, I don't remember doing that. That's what it says, so we must have done. Okay, any questions from last week before I move on to this week's work? I understand that when I move in front of the projector, I've got writing all over my face, so I'm sorry about that. There's nothing much I can do about it. Any questions about last week? No? One over there.
I was a bit puzzled by those sentences. I believe Marion is wearing jeans.
Oh yes, I said something like Fred believes that Marianne's wearing jeans.
Fred believes and using the other form that. An indication was if Fred believes that, then the two sentences are kind of compound sentences, innocuous. Whereas if that is missing, Fred believes Marion is wearing jeans.
No, I think you might have misunderstood a little bit by last week, about last week. What I was using was a complex sentence where you have one sentence embedded in another sentence. So Fred believes that Marianne's wearing jeans, and Marianne's wearing jeans. And I showed you that the truth values of the two sentences vary quite independently. And I used that to show you that you've got to distinguish between somebody's believing P, so it's being true that somebody believes P, and P's being true, so the belief they have being true. And I pointed out an ambiguity that Marianne's wearing jeans is true for Fred can mean nothing more than Fred believes that Marianne's wearing jeans, which is perfectly innocuous, or it could be an expression of individual relativism. Marianne's wearing jeans is true for Fred, even if it's not true for anyone else. And I pointed out how weird that is, and how we mustn't slip from the innocuous reading into the non-innocuous reading.
It's true for everyone.
If it's true, it's true for everyone. Yes, that's the thought.
So the thought,
Marianne's wearing jeans is true, then Marianne's wearing jeans is true for you, and true for you, and true for you, whatever you believe. There are some beliefs that are true even if nobody believes them. So there was a time when everyone believed the earth was flat, a perfectly reasonable belief. It looks flat, doesn't it? We walk on it, I cycle on it, it seems, well, some of the time it seems flat. But actually, even when everyone believed that the earth was flat, it wasn't flat, was it? Their belief was false.
So it's the question of the actual values. It's not the way the two sentences are connected. That doesn't make the difference to it. Fred believes that.
That has got nothing. No,
fine.
That's just.
Yeah, sorry. That was the misunderstanding.
Okay, I'm glad we've sorted it out. Okay, let's go on. This week, we're going to learn how to analyse arguments by learning how to set them out logic style. First, we're going to deal with ambiguities, so we'll be doing this first. We did a bit of it, so we did make a start on analysing the arguments last week, because you already know, believe it or not, what it is to set out an argument in logic book style. We're going to learn about identifying premises and conclusions, and we're going to do all these things, all of which are necessary to properly analyse an argument. Okay, so let's get started. So we've successfully analysed an argument when we've revealed its structure. And we reveal its structure by setting it out logic book style. And this is an argument set out logic book style. You may remember this argument from last week. Okay, so there are the two premises and the conclusion.
Just checking, you're going to have handouts for your slides.
Yes. I'm sorry, I should have said that. I should have welcomed you all, and indeed welcomed all the podcast people, and said there are handouts for all the slides, so you don't need to be writing everything down. Yes, this is what it is to set out an argument logic book style. And incidentally, there are different conventions here, so some people do it by putting the two premises and then a line to mark the conclusion. And of course, you don't have to write premise one, etc., out in full, because that's a bit of a bore, frankly, when you're doing it often. Okay, so premise one, the mail is always late when it rains. Premise two, it's raining. Conclusion, the mail will be late. Can you see that the structure of that argument is revealed? You can start to see. Can I put your hands up if you think this is a good argument? Yeah, you see, it becomes much easier to evaluate when you can see the structure of an argument. So our aim today is to learn how to analyse arguments and set them out logic book style, but let's have a look at ambiguity first. A word or phrase is ambiguous if it can be understood in different ways. So if the very same word or phrase can have different interpretations, but there are different types of ambiguity. And this is where I wish I knew the bells and whistles for PowerPoint, because I would have brought these in one by one, but I don't know how to do that, so you've got them all at once, but we're going to talk about them one by one. Okay, so a lexical ambiguity is a single word that can be understood in more than one way. So how many meanings can you think of the word bank? Give me a few. Put your hand up so I've got...
Where you put your money.
Where you put your money, so a financial institution. Aircraft banks when it turns, exactly, so it doesn't need to be a verb.
Where you get blood.
A blood bank, yeah, okay, I haven't thought of that one. The Sam's Bank, woo, this is nice, we have more than even I thought. Do you have another one? Right, okay.
Using a metaphorically, banking on something.
Yes, you can bank on something, good. So that's not that bank, but it's banking on something. Wow, that was good, I wish I'd asked you before. Okay, good. That's a lexical ambiguity. So you can get one word that means different things. Then there's structural ambiguity. Words in a sentence or phrase can be grouped together in different ways. So I saw in my paper the black taxi drivers were on strike. Now, okay, how is that structurally ambiguous? There's no word in that that's ambiguous, is there?
No.
But it's ambiguous in the way it's put together. Put your hands up.
It could mean the car rather than the actual driver.
What could mean the car?
Black.
That's right, yes. Okay, so black could go with taxi.
Yes.
So the drivers of black taxis are on strike. Or what else could it mean?
Drivers.
The taxi drivers who are black are on strike. Yes, okay. So and what about every pretty girl loves a sailor? There's an old chestnut for you.
Loves a particular sailor, or...?
Okay, is there one sailor such that every girl loves him, the lucky chap? Or is it that every girl loves a sailor, but a different one in each case? How boring. Okay, good. So that's structural ambiguity. Then there's an ambiguity of cross-reference. So a word or phrase might refer to more than one thing or more than one person. So Jazz doesn't want Jane at the party because she doesn't like her. What's the problem here?
Pronoun. Which one is it referring to?
Okay, so it, which is the it that's the reference of which is questionable.
Who doesn't like who?
She and her.
She and her, exactly, the two pronouns. We don't know whether it could, we'll see later what it could be, but yes, there are different ways of removing that cross-reference, aren't there? And actually, the sentence as it is at the moment doesn't make it clear which it is. So there's an ambiguity here. And then there are pragmatic ambiguities, when a sentence could be used to do different things. So what might you do with the sentence, I rang the police?
Inform.
You could inform someone, I rang the police. I rang the police, so you're telling somebody that I rang the police, you don't need to, or something like that. Anything else?
I'm not sure you did. I rang the police.
I rang the police, yes. Okay. Is that again informing? What are we doing with that one? I rang the police.
It could be obvious.
It was the police I rang rather than the fire brigade or the cat gone up the tree and I rang the police instead of the...
I rang the police.
It could be a question.
It could be a question. I rang the police with that lovely Australian intonation. Actually, it's not lovely, is it?
Or it could be either I rang the police as opposed to telling them in any other way, or it was the police that I rang.
I rang there rather than running there, yeah. Or something like that. Okay, good. Lots of different ambiguities there. So you see there are four different types of ambiguity in that sentence. And also a string of words can be ambiguous when spoken but not written. And as I was just writing that out, I heard on the radio this picture of water, and I thought, oh, wait. I mean, it was obvious on the radio which it was, but can you see how that's an auditory ambiguity? Yeah. But the minute you write it down, it's not ambiguous at all. But it's certainly an ambiguity when spoken. And we can also say, do swallows fly south for winter? Do swallows fly south for winter? Do swallows fly south for winter? Etc. So by intonation we can get a lot of differences into that sentence. And ambiguity is really a not a good thing when it comes to arguments, and especially when it comes to analysing arguments. Because you've either got to rewrite the sentence to get rid of it, so that if you know it's that there's one sailor that every pretty girl loves, you can just rewrite it so you've got there's one sailor such that every pretty girl loves him. Or you've got to produce two analyses, which is a bit of a nuisance, isn't it, to represent each meaning. So if this were a premise of an argument where we had, do you remember, the ambiguity of cross-reference, you would have to do two arguments, one with that as the premise and one with that as the premise. And I think, is there any other meaning? I'm not sure, but if there's multiple meanings, if there's more than two, you would need different analysis to cover every meaning. So ambiguity is a real nuisance. I said earlier that philosophers have a name for being pedants. They like you to say what you mean. They like you to be clear. But the reason for that is I can't get at your thoughts except through your language, or through your language and your behaviour, but it's your linguistic behaviour that enables me to get to your thoughts. How else would I be able to get to your thoughts? And if your language isn't clear, then your thoughts are not clear to me, are they? So I've often had undergraduates try and convince me that they have a thought there, really. It's just that they can't put it into language. And, you know, so I try this, I try asking that, and I try asking that. And in the end, I conclude, if they still can't get it out, that they haven't got a thought there at all, have they? What they've got is a vague sort of mishmash of concepts that are going around in their head. There is no thought, because thoughts are expressible in language. And, you know, you can get out an incoherent thought, and a good tutor should be able to pick it apart a bit and make of it a coherent thought. What there isn't is a thought that can't be expressed in language. So, but your language must be precise for me to get at your thought. And if the language you use is ambiguous, I've got two thoughts and I don't know which is yours. Two thoughts or even more, maybe. So ambiguity is a real nuisance. Okay, but we've looked at it now. So now we're going to assume that we don't have problems with ambiguity, and we're going to look at how to reveal the structure of an argument. And here is a list of things. I thought you might have a little list that you can tick off as you go through the leader and your paper the next morning and try and analyse your argument. First, you've got to identify its conclusion. That's usually fairly easy. Next, its premises. I say it's easy, but actually if you try it with a leader of your paper, you'll find that it's not as easy as it looks. But you're trying to identify the conclusion, then the premises, then you need to eliminate irrelevancies. And human beings, when they use language, they don't just use it to inform. They also add all sorts of other things, so expressions about how they're feeling, or explanations of a premise they've just made, or something like that. And you've got to get rid of all those if you're trying to analyse an argument, because they're just going to distract you, they're going to lead you away from what you're doing. You'll also find that we may add in many things to an argument that are not necessary, but we also leave things out of arguments that are necessary. So many arguments are enthymemes, as they're called, arguments with suppressed premises. And often that's acceptable, but sometimes it's not, and we need to know the difference between when a suppressed premise is a perfectly reasonable thing to do and when suppressing it is not reasonable. And finally, we need to make the language consistent. I'm going to go through each of these steps, so that's just a list, so you've got a handy mnemonic.
How do you spell enthymemes?
Enthymeme. It'll come up in a minute, I think. If it doesn't, I'll spell it again for you. Okay, any questions about this list, Chris?
Are we only talking about deductive arguments here?
At this point, we're not. That's a perfectly good question. Next week, we're going to look at the different types of arguments, inductive and deductive. We have much more reason to want to analyse deductive arguments because we've got mechanical ways of testing them. But as a matter of fact, this would apply to inductive arguments as well.
Okay.
Why do you use the word controversial?
It seemed to be the right word to use. there are some suppressed premises that are not... Well, actually, I'm going to talk about it. If that question still comes up when I've done so, perhaps you could ask it again. Okay, so first we're looking at identify the conclusion. The conclusion of an argument is the sentence that's being asserted on the basis of the other sentences. And it's not always at the end of the argument. People often assume that whatever sentence is at the end of an argument is going to be the conclusion, but that's absolutely not the case. Where's the conclusion of this argument?
Beginning.
Right, it's Marianne is wearing jeans, isn't it? Can you all see that that's the conclusion of that argument, even though it's right at the beginning of the argument? So it often comes at the beginning, because sometimes people assert what they're going to assert, and then they argue for it. And what about this one? I did change a slide then, didn't I? Yes, I have changed it. Yes. I should have made a different argument, shouldn't I? Then I wouldn't know. Where's the conclusion in the middle of this?
In the middle.
Dead easy, that one, isn't it? Okay, the conclusion is Marianne's wearing jeans again, but this time it's in the middle. So it's Friday, so Marianne is wearing jeans because Marianne always wears jeans on Friday. Okay, so again, there it is in the middle. And it's sometimes possible to identify a conclusion because it's indicated by some sort of argument in conclusion indicator. So therefore, hence, consequently, lots of conclusion indicators. And here we have an exercise that is dead easy. Which of these arguments has a conclusion indicator? Think about it and put your hands up when you've got an answer. Don't yell it out because then other people may not have finished. Put your hand up when you've got the answer. Okay, I think that's most of you. Who's going to tell me? Would you like to tell me? Which of these arguments has a conclusion that's indicated by a conclusion indicator?
1, 2, and 3.
Right, one, does everyone agree with one?
Yes.
Yeah. What's it? Therefore, yeah, blindingly obvious, that one. Okay, two. Right, what's the conclusion indicator there?
I'm using and, but it doesn't necessarily.
I don't think after all indicates a conclusion at all. I don't think there is a conclusion indicator in that sentence.
I was seeing that, but I understand that it's not.
You were thinking that was a conclusion indicator. Okay, it certainly can be, and can be a conclusion indicator, but I don't think it's functioning as one in that sentence. Yeah. But you said three. Which is the conclusion indicator there?
Sorry.
Okay, does everyone agree?
Yeah.
Good. Anyone think there's a conclusion indicator in four? Some of you didn't get that far. Okay, there isn't. Good. Okay, so there are conclusion indicators in numbers 1 and 3, but not in numbers 2 and 4. You can never rely on the presence of a conclusion indicator. And sometimes conclusion indicator, I mean, actually, after all, can be a conclusion indicator, as can and. But if they're not functioning to pick out the sentences being asserted, then it's not a conclusion indicator. The only foolproof way of identifying a conclusion is by its role in the argument, and this is very important. The fact that it's the sentence that's being asserted on the basis of the other sentence, the one for which the argument is being made, that's what makes it a conclusion. And again, if over the next week you have a look at the leader in your paper, you'll see that in a leader, in any serious paper, there'll usually be one or two conclusions, and you identify them by the role that they're playing in the sentence, the fact that they are being asserted. Sometimes the best way to determine which sentence is the conclusion of an argument is by reading out the argument. And put on your acting hat and just read it as if you were making it. And that will actually quite often illuminate for you which the conclusion is. Okay, can you identify the conclusions? Would you like to all work separately on this for the moment? I don't mind if you work together, because some of them are a little... Identify the conclusion of this argument, and then we'll do it together.
Can you focus it a bit?
Is it not focused?
It's not, well, not as good as the others.
I'm afraid I can't. Actually, can you see it?
Yes.
Because I can get a technician to come and focus it. Okay. Actually, some of you start from this end. That would be quite useful. So chop the room in half. You start from the bottom and you start from the top. And that way we'll... Okay, let's have a look at them together. Looking at the top one, help is urgently needed in view of the fact that 200 people are dying daily. What's the conclusion of that argument? Help is needed urgently. Well done. That was an easy one. What about this one? Some contribution to the magnetic field comes from electric currents in the upper atmosphere. Otherwise, we can't account for the relation between variations in the magnetic elements and the radiation received from the sun. Would somebody like to put their hand up and tell me which? Go on.
The beginning.
The beginning. Would you like to read out the sentence?
Some contribution to the magnetic.
Okay, some contribution to the magnetic field. Yes, I agree. Does everyone else agree?
Yes.
Okay. What about number three? Number two, rather. Put up your hand.
Strikes are rather likely to wither away in a democratic country.
Yes, and we've got a lovely conclusion indicator here, haven't we? It follows. So strikes are unlikely to wither away in any democratic country so long as communists have strong minority influence. Okay, and number four, this side of the room, anyone get to that?
The effect of AIDS, CTH, is not due.
Okay, it's again the first sentence. The effect of ACTH on gout is not due to increased renal acid clearance alone. Okay, and we've got another indication there with SINTS, an indication of a premise in this case. And the last one. I don't know if there's any such thing as bird then, actually. It doesn't matter, does it? What's the conclusion here? Again, it's at the beginning. The nests of Verdin are surprisingly conspicuous. I've got answers to all the exercises here, so you'll be able to check them up later on.
You can pause because
for whatever sort of sophisticated form of word you use, you can just put because in each one. You mean because can be used as
yes.
a premise indicator and indeed a conclusion
yes.
indicator sometimes.
Yes,
yes. It, because is a very interesting one actually, because we actually use it to mean for the reason that, and it's not clear that it isn't actually very different from for the reason that, that we do use it. Perhaps I'll talk about that a bit at the end if we've got a bit of time left. Yes, because is a very useful word in arguments. Any other questions about that one? Okay, so here are five things, just to summarise, identifying conclusion, five things that you need to be able to do to discover, to discern conclusions. Okay, let's move on to the second. Or are there any questions about identifying conclusions? And then I'll move on to identifying premises. Okay, let's look at identifying premises. Those sentences which are offered as reasons for believing the conclusion. So a sentence that's a conclusion in one argument might, of course, be a premise in another argument. So any declarative sentence can be used as either a premise or a conclusion. It'd be interesting to think if there was any declarative sentence that could be used only as one or the other. I don't think so. But again, what is important is always the role that's being played in a sentence. And premises, like conclusions, are sometimes indicated by premise indicators, because, as, for, but again, the only foolproof way is by identifying the role that it plays in an argument. And sometimes an argument contains two sentences conjoined by and. And when you're analysing the argument, you should consider whether to represent them as one complex sentence, leave the and in, or whether to separate them and leave out the and. So I've got an example of that, I think. So you should split up a conjunction whenever you need both sentences for the conclusion to follow, because you're going to end up splitting it up at some point. You may as well split it up right at the beginning. So in the sentence, it's Friday today, and Marianne always wears jeans on Friday, so Marianne is wearing jeans today. Which is the conjunction? It's the first sentence. It's Friday today, and Marianne always wears jeans on Friday. Sorry, the first part of the sentence, that's a comma. It's best to split that up, because can you see that the argument depends on both these sentences, and therefore you need both of them to come out. So this argument, it's Friday today, Marianne always wears jeans on a Friday, Marianne is wearing jeans today, the argument's revealed better than it would be by leaving the and in. Do you see the difference?
In that statement, the argument, the premise and the conclusions are controlled entirely by the joining word.
Yes, indeed they are.
If you switch it round, the conclusion could be it is Friday. So it's not the role the sentence is playing, it is only the so word that made it a conclusion and nothing else.
Sorry, I'm not with you. Do you want me to go back to the argument? Or no, we've got the argument there.
What I'm saying is, I think, for me anyway, it read the so word. When you first put it up, it was...
Okay, let's put it back and then we can see what you're...
But I was just going back to...
That one?
Yes. But
okay.
When that came up a few slides back, it is Friday, Marianne always wears jeans on Friday, so Marianne is wearing jeans today. It is only the word so that makes that the conclusion. Because if you drop the word so, it is Friday today,
yes.
Marianne always wears jeans on Friday,
okay.
Marianne is wearing jeans.
Right.
Could the conclusion be it is Friday?
Yes, you just swap the first
and
last.
Yes, oh yes, you can put them round. Yeah.
So what I'm saying
is...
This is
indicating that this is
the
conclusion.
Only way of knowing.
Yeah, okay, fine. But why is that a problem? Because that is the way of knowing.
No, I just conflicted with what you said when you said... The foolproof way is the role the sentence plays in the sentence.
Okay. Good. Yes, I see what you mean. Okay, so what you're saying is that that sentence and that sentence could be play the same role were it not for...
For that, yes.
But actually what I'm claiming is that in this argument, that sentence is playing the role of conclusion, and that's indicated by that.
Yes.
Do you see what I mean?
I do, yes, I understand, yeah.
Yeah. And you can only work out that that's the conclusion because that's of this argument, because it's playing that role in this argument. If we change the so round, so it's Friday, Marianne's wearing jeans, and Marianne, we'd have to say, only wears jeans on Friday, so it is Friday, then you've got a different argument, and a different sentence would be playing a role
in
it.
Yes, that's the point I'm making.
Yeah.
But you could wear jeans on...
But what I'm saying is I am right to say that it's the role, you can only tell the conclusion by the role that it's playing in an argument.
Yes, as long as it has the so word with it.
If
you wrote that down without the word so in it.
Yes, you wouldn't do that though, because I'm talking about the role, that sentence is playing that role in that argument. If you change the argument, you're also changing the role of the sentence.
Okay, makes sense.
Do you see what I mean?
But you could be wearing jeans every Tuesday as well. It doesn't mean that you only wear them on Friday.
No, that's why I said if we change the argument, I'd have to put only instead of whatever it is that's here. But this, I think this is a red herring, and we're in danger of letting it distract us, so let's move straight on. Okay, so... do you see why it's best to split up the conjunction here to get the two sentences out rather than leave them as one sentence? Chris?
I don't think I can see an occasion when you would want to leave the and in, honestly, and leave it as a clear argument.
Okay, let me just give you one.
Okay.
Be careful, because not all ands can join sentences. This is another reason it's nice to split them up. Sometimes... ands you join other parts of language, and sometimes it's used restrictively. So let's have a look at some of these. Here's an exercise. Okay, which of these sentences can be represented as a simple conjunction, i.e. two separate simple sentences? Claude is a black and white cat.
Yeah.
No, why not?
It's one cat,
yeah. He can't be both black and white. You can't have Claude is a black cat and Claude is a white cat. The and there is conjoining these two predicates, not two sentences. What about Charles is a stupid boy? There's no and there, but actually there is an and. Can anyone tell me what it is? Claude is stupid and Claude is a boy. That's right, so that actually is an implicit and. The clever twin was always teasing her dim-witted sister. Is there an and in there? Okay, so we've got a suggestion here. The twin is clever and the twin was always teasing her dim-witted sister. Is that a reasonable analysis of number three? Yeah, no, it's not actually. Can anyone tell me why?
I think that the friendship two sisters, one is clever and the other one is dim.
Good, that's exactly right. We're using clever to pick out the twin who's teasing her sister, if you see what I mean. So we need it in, it's not a separate. And to illustrate, I'll come to you in a minute if I may. Okay, look at these last two here. The policeman, comma, who is watching through binoculars, ducked just in time. Here I've taken the commas out, the policeman who is watching through binoculars ducked just in time. One of these is a conjunction and one of them isn't. Which is the conjunction? Okay, anyone think, I'm giving it away now. No, it's four, isn't it? Have a look. Listen to the English, listen to my meaning. In which sentence am I giving two bits of information about the policeman?
Yes.
And in which sentence am I only giving one bit of information? So the policeman, who is watching through binoculars, ducked just in time. The policeman who is watching through binoculars ducked just in time. Do you see here, I'm saying something that could be, the policeman was watching through binoculars and the policeman ducked just in time. Whereas here, I'm using watching through binoculars to identify the policeman who ducked just in time. Do you see? And you can always do this. You speak English as well as I do. As if you listen to the way you would say it, you'll work out the meaning of the sentence. So that's a conjunction. That one isn't. So and is a very slippery word in English. It often conjoins sentences, but it often doesn't. It conjoins other parts of language. And there are all sorts of ways you can use the conjunction without using and. Although it was snowing, she went out with wet hair. Do you see that means she went out with wet hair and she went out when it was snowing? He was rich but nice. Do you see that but actually means and? Perhaps with a slightly added implication of something. It was comfortable if a little cold. What's that if doing there? It's playing the role of and again. So the word and is very slippery. It comes in when it doesn't mean and it's not there when it does mean and. So always be a little wary when you see and in an argument.
I don't think it's the same thing.
Sorry?
It's a negative, say it was comfortable and a little cold. It was.
You're implying a little more than it was comfortable and
it was both positive implications. But if you
yes.
are if or but nice, one is positive and one is negative.
I completely agree. If you say it was comfortable if a little cold, you're actually implying something just a little more than and, aren't you? You're implying that it was unusual perhaps for it to become. And certainly unusual that he's rich but nice. You know, I mean, no rich people are nice, are they? So, I mean, so this is rather odd. So I agree with you, an implication is left out, but for the purposes of logic, actually and is what we need there. That's what the argument is saying.
Where's your evidence that no rich people are nice?
I have no evidence at all.
You believe.
I don't even believe it, no. Now, do you remember what we said about using sentences and mentioning them last week? I cite this as my defence.
Did you go back to number three?
Yep. When you say number three?
Yeah, sorry. When you explain it, I'm not sure if this is relevant, but it seems to me that the clever twin, right, may be teasing her dim-witted sister, which is not another twin, the other twin. It could be a third or fourth sister. So I think there's ambiguity there.
Yes, the sister may not be the twin. Yes,
yeah.
You're quite right. Yeah. So that is ambiguous as well. But I still think it's not a conjunction.
No, I agree.
But yes, you're right. There's also an ambiguity. Well spotted. Okay. Now, there are two major problems to be aware of when identifying premises. One is that the person offering the argument may have uttered all sorts of fluff in addition to the argument, words, phrases, or even sentences that are irrelevant to the argument. And the other is that the person offering the argument may not have uttered sentences that are relevant to the argument, that you think, well, hang on, there's not an argument here unless we put this sentence in here. So let's have a look at these. Irrelevancies are ubiquitous in everyday arguments. So have a look at this argument. Now, that sounds like something you might say, doesn't it? Or something that somebody else may say to you. But there's quite a lot of, I mean, there's a clear argument in there, but there's also a lot of other things. So what I want you to do, can you identify the premises and the conclusion of this argument, and also some irrelevancies? So identify the conclusion and put your hand up when you've got it.
First,
I'm fed up. Don't chill out. Just put your hand
up. I'm fed up is the conclusion.
Yes, could you put your hand up when you've got the answer, because let everyone else come to the answer too. Okay, so I'm fed up is the conclusion, you think?
No.
Right. Okay, who else has a different conclusion? Did you have your hand up?
The post is going to be late again.
The post is going to be late again. Everyone agree?
Yes.
Yep. And the premises?
It's
pouring.
It's pouring.
And
the mail is always late when it rains.
The mail is always
late
when it's raining. Okay, good. So is everything else irrelevant? Now, you thought that I'm fed up was the conclusion. Do you agree that it's not? Now, okay. So what have we got? We've lost the word again. Have we?
Yeah.
Oh, no, we've left it in, but we could have lost it, couldn't we?
Yeah.
It doesn't add anything to the argument. The again is for emphasis, isn't it? The post is going to be late again. Okay, what about I'm fed up?
Irrelevant.
I mean, it's just somebody expressing her emotions on top of the argument. The mail is always late when it's raining. Because the postman doesn't like getting wet, we seem to have
irrelevant.
Lost that.
Irrelevant.
Yeah. Why have we lost because the postman doesn't like getting wet?
It's irrelevant,
isn't it? It doesn't add anything to the argument. All it is an explanation of premise two. Do you see? So, and we do this all the time. As we're making arguments, we think that we need to support one of our premises, perhaps, so we'll add in another little sub-argument to support this premise. But actually, when we're analysing the argument, we want to leave out those little sub-arguments. We might want to put them in as a separate analysis, but we want to get them out here. So, I mean, once you've stripped away the bare bones of that argument, it's much clearer. So, there we are, that's where we've got to. Is that what we had there?
Yes.
Yes. Well done. You came to it exactly. There we are. So that's getting rid of the irrelevancies. Yes, well, that's what I've just told you. So that, were you taught at school to not to use saying too often or it's nice or. So. You've got to vary your adjectives, you've got to vary your verbs and everything like that, because it makes life much more interesting, doesn't it? Well, so it does. But when you're doing logic, it's actually an irritant. You want all the everything to be just expressed exactly by what you mean. Okay, now it was clear that you knew what was irrelevant and what wasn't there, so that was great, but you'll find that actually, that becomes easier, again, when you're looking at much more complex arguments like the leader of your newspaper or the one that you're going to do at home this week that I'm going to give you. You'll know you need to be a bit more careful about what the irrelevancies are. Okay, so you may find when you're analysing an argument that you think some premises are missing. There you are, there's a spelling of enthymeme. An argument with a suppressed premise is called an enthymeme. And they're extremely common, and that's because it would be boring beyond belief if everyone explicated every presupposition or common belief that underpins their arguments. And so if Priya tells Sarah that she's taking her umbrella because she thinks it's raining, and if she were to add, "and my umbrella will stop me from getting wet," Priya's not the sort of person you'd want to end up at the pub with. we just don't eke out all our arguments with every single premise that we might otherwise need. We can assume, can't we, that anyone she's talking to is going to know this. This is common knowledge. So with enthymemes, the crucial thing is to distinguish between benign premise suppression, like the one with Priya and the umbrella, and the suppression of a premise because it's controversial. Now that isn't on. It's very easy because we want to convince other people. And if we think we can do so by leaving out a premise that actually is something they're not going to agree with, then we'll leave it out. So what we need to be alert for is premises that have been suppressed, not because they're benign and a matter of common knowledge, but because they're actually quite controversial. So here's an enthymeme in which a controversial premise is suppressed. Have a look at it and tell me what the controversial premise is.
Well,
put your hands up when you've got the answer rather than getting up. Okay, anyone on the back?
Is it, sorry, it's an embryo as a person? Is that the controversial
thing? Sorry, say it again?
That an embryo is a person.
Yes, is that what other people...
An innocent
person, yes, absolutely. In therapeutic cloning, the embryo is always killed. So human therapeutic cloning is wrong because it's wrong to kill innocent persons. Well, okay, I mean, that sounds like a good argument on the face of it, isn't it? It is wrong to kill innocent persons, and if that's what therapeutic cloning is, then surely we should ban it. But the premise in there that's controversial is the one that the human embryo is an innocent person. Lots of people believe that, and lots of people disagree with that. And so, because it's controversial, because some people agree and some people don't agree, you absolutely cannot leave it out of an argument. Because without it, the argument is not correct. Does that answer your question about why I put controversial in there? Because it's the very controversy that makes it very important to make it explicit. Okay, so. Is there a controversial suppressed premises in these arguments? Let's look at the first one. So female circumcision should be permitted in Somalia because it's an integral part of Somali culture. Does anyone think there's a suppressed premise in there?
Yes.
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 Okay, what do you think the suppressed premise is?
That everything which is cultural should be permitted. But
Suti
is a thing which England has stood up against, for instance.
Okay. Does everyone agree that that's what the suppressed premise is, or does anyone have something different? So the suppressed premise was, if it is an integral part of culture, it should be permitted. Yep, is that what you're saying? Did you have a different one?
Which implies that anything that's part of culture is good.
Okay, we don't need to look at the implications of the suppressed premises we're putting in. We just need the suppressed premise. But that argument is not a good argument, is it? Until you put that premise in. And once you put that premise in, immediately the argument starts to look weaker, doesn't it? Mm. Because we can think of lots of examples of things that have been culturally... integral to a culture, like Suti is a very good example, burning widows. Anything else that cultural that we don't permit?
Feet.
Did we ban that or did it just die out? But yes, we certainly wouldn't. We wouldn't like it to start again, would we? Would we, those of us who would get our feet bound? any other cultural practice?
Child sacrifice.
Child sacrifice, yes. Yeah, there are lots of cultural practices we're not going to go for. So once you put that premise in, you realise that this is... okay, what about in... Is there a suppressed premise in argument two?
Yes.
Okay, what is it?
Gender issue.
The wife must be.
Wives have to be female. Wives have to be female.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's wives must be female, or wives are female. Jem is male, so it can't be Sam's wife. I mean, that's got to be right, hasn't it? But there's something missing here. Now, is this a controversial suppressed premise?
No.
It really isn't, is it? I mean, we accept that. I mean, I'm begging any questions here about gay marriage or anything like that. Or maybe I am, but if I am, I apologise to anyone who's bothered about it. I didn't intend to. So the idea is there that that's a suppressed premise, but it's not a controversial one. What about number three? What's the suppressed premise?
Well,
that cars need petrol to run.
Cars need petrol to run. Okay, is that suppressed? Is that controversial?
No.
No. Okay, again, we can leave that out. What about number four? We can never be sure that someone is guilty, therefore the death penalty should be abolished. Who thinks it's controversial? Put your hands up. Okay. Who thinks it's not controversial? Okay. What is the suppressed premise? I've got to the point where I can't think. Let me just see what I've got on the answer sheet. This is my crib sheet here.
We should only put somebody to death if we're convinced that they're guilty.
Yes, the death penalty should be abolished, I've got. If there's a risk of using it on someone innocent. Okay, is that controversial or not? Put up your hand if you think it is. Okay, put up your hand if you think it's not. Okay, that makes it an even more controversial premise. Because actually you don't even know there's a controversy there. And in fact, there is a controversy there. A lot of people, in the States, for example, a lot of people would accept that somebody innocent may die, but it's worth it because it's enough of a deterrent. I mean, if you don't agree with that, that's just the very nature of a controversial premise, isn't it? So with enthymemes, with suppressed premises, don't be, and in my experience, this is always, it's a very, when you're a beginner, you want to make your arguments absolutely watertight, so you want to put all these suppressed premises in. But actually, if they're common knowledge, if they're blindingly obvious, you don't need to put it in. It's only if they're controversial that you need to put them in. Question over here.
I was just going to say, it would change completely if you said, in the UK, we can never be sure that someone is guilty. That would be therefore less controversial. But if you put in the USA, we can never be sure, that would be controversial.
It's certainly true that controversy can be culturally specific, yes, whether something's controversial or not can be culturally specific, yes. I think there are probably quite a few people in this country who might agree that, I don't know, and I'm sure there are many people in the States who would go the other way, yeah.
But the difference there in this country, the hanging of Bentley.
The chap who shot, the 16-year-old who shot a policeman.
Yes. And Craig went lived. Bentley was 18.
Yes. I'm not going to get into controversies.
But the fact that the difference there, I mean, resulted in the change of law.
Yes, it resulted in a change of law because it really highlighted the fact that we feel very uncomfortable, whatever we think about the death penalty, we feel very uncomfortable about innocent people being executed. But I don't think that stopped. It hasn't put the controversy to rest, has it? Certainly not worldwide. And it's worldwide we're talking about here, I think. Okay, so I gave you a list of seven things we need to know to identify a conclusion. Here are some things that we need to know to identify a premise. So have a look at these and see if you've got questions about any of them. Handouts for this, you'll find that they've been put vertically rather than across, which will cause you to think something's gone wrong here. Have another look and look at the down rather than across, and you'll find it solves itself. Sorry, do carry on. Okay, any questions about identifying premises?
Could you just explain number seven? Number seven. Benign or not?
Well, that's really, I'm using benign to mean not controversial.
Ah, okay.
Okay, any other questions there? No? Let's move on. Okay, so let's finally look at making the language of an argument consistent. This is, again, more simple in the way we're going to be doing it here than you'll find it when you're working on your leaders and newspapers. How might we make the terms here more consistent? So premise one, it's pouring. Premise two, the mail is always late when it's raining. And conclusion, the post is going to be late. Good, we've got pouring and raining here. Well, why? But just for interest? Well, let's get rid of one of them. Anything else?
Mail and post.
We've got mail and post. And again, why? We don't need that. So if we get rid of that one, and we just choose one of the terms, doesn't matter which, and see immediately how much clearer the argument looks. And then the other one, I haven't done it, but the other one was the mail, and so, yes. And now, can you see how much simpler the argument is? So you've taken an argument that's got all sorts of things like, I'm fed up, the mail is late again, the postman hates going out when it's cold, etc. And you've just reduced it to that. Much, much clearer and much easier to evaluate. Okay, now, I was going to say we could do that at home, but actually we've got 25 minutes left, and if my voice holds out, we could actually do this together, or we could use it as a question time. Actually, I'm not sure my voice is going to hold out. Could you turn the sound off for a minute? Because I'm going to have a coughing fit. Talk amongst yourselves. And then start working on the argument. I'm going to edit this off. Let's try this again. Okay. Right, now here's an argument, isn't there? Now, so there you are. I've been lulling you into a false sense of security by using all these very easy arguments. Let's have a look at this one. Okay, have a look, identify the conclusion, and don't forget you've got a list of steps that you might use to identify the conclusion, and then tell me which is the conclusion. I promise you there is one. And put your hand up when you've got it. Don't yell it out. Let other people come to it. Well, that's all right. Quite a few have got it already. Hand right up so I can see how many of you. Okay, that's a fair number. So what do you think the conclusion is?
I'm not being cruel when I pull my pants down.
Everyone agree?
Yeah.
Put your hand up if you don't agree. Right up so I can see you. Okay, what do you think the conclusion is?
I'm only cruel if I inflict pain.
Okay, why do you think that's the conclusion?
Sorry, I've changed my mind.
Right, okay. That was easy. Did you have another one? No. Okay.
I have another one.
You've got another one, go on.
I'm not a sinner.
I'm not a sinner.
Yes. I have not sinned, put it that way. I cannot be said to have sinned.
Oh, I see. So actually what you're doing is removing inconsistent terms. Is it?
Yes, I'm trying to
this is not the moment to remove inconsistent terms. I mean, well done for doing so, but if that's what you're doing. I do think it's a very good thing to do things in the order that I've given you, because that way you've got a sort of tick list of things that you need to do. And of course, as you get better at it, you can do it all at once. And you can start removing inconsistent terms as you identify the premises and conclusions. But let's just identify the conclusion at the moment. Okay, I'm not being cruel when I pull my cat's tail. Put your hand up if you agree that that's the conclusion. Lots of hands not up. Okay, well, I think it's the conclusion too. I'm not being cruel when I pull my cat's tail. Okay, right, let's have a look at the premises. Have a look at them, put your hand up when you've got the premises. put your hand up, don't yell out, let other people work on it as well. Hand right up if you've got premise one. Okay, just a bit longer than that. Okay, what's premise one? Okay, I am only being cruel if I inflict pain. Good. Okay, premise two.
I'm not sure there is.
This is the really difficult one. Don't yell out. Let the tongues do. Okay. No, we've had you. We've had you two. Somebody right at the back there. Gentleman at the back.
Animals aren't moral agents.
Animals aren't moral agents. Okay, actually, I shouldn't have written that down. I should have asked whether people agree. Do people agree with that?
No.
No. Sorry, sir. What do you think it is?
I would say cats can't suffer, but it doesn't say cats can't suffer, it says innocents can't suffer. And it's a long, rambling explanation why cats are innocent.
So cats can't suffer is what you want.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you're doing is you're getting rid of some irrelevancies at the same time, which is actually the same as what you've done over there. That's fine. Okay. Any other bids for premise two back there?
I thought it was God would not allow innocence.
Yeah.
God would not allow innocence to suffer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Any other?
There's an implicit one in that it's, which is that it's okay for sinners to suffer.
Do you think that ought to be put down as well? I mean, that may be an implication of the argument, but our job is not to work out the implications of an argument. It's to identify the argument.
Were you including?
I agree that there is an implication, but I'm not sure we should need to put it down.
Were you including suppressed?
Yes, I'm only being cruel as I inflict pain.
Because we've got that as premise one. Yeah. So I thought I'd heard that before somewhere. Over there?
The pulling the cat's tail does not inflict pain.
Pulling cat's tail does not inflict pain. Okay, lots of options on that one, aren't there? some of the volunteers come up and hold this up.
I don't understand it.
That's it, it's going to be you, yes. You happen to be in the front. And
well, that lets me off having to answers, doesn't it?
No, 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 no. I think perhaps we'll make him give answers, shall we? Okay, so we're agreed on premise one, aren't we? So I am only being cruel if I inflict pain. And we've got the conclusion, which is I'm not being cruel when I pull my cat's tail. Okay. Shall we start by making some terms consistent? Things like that. Maybe that'll help. Do you see what I'm doing now is I'm taking the list of things that I gave you to do, but when we've got a problem with how to identify a premise here, we may try to make the premises and conclusions we do have consistent. Okay, so how might we do that?
Pain and suffering.
Sorry?
We've got pain and suffering.
I'm thinking between these two. So we've got the premise, I'm only being cruel if I inflict pain. And the conclusion, I'm not being cruel when I pull my cat's tail.
So change.
We can change one to the other, can't we? I'm not being cruel if I pull my cat's tail. Or we could have done it, in fact, perhaps we should have done it the other way around. Do you see, I'm only being cruel if I...
Inflict pain.
We got to have to leave it inflict pain, aren't we? I'm not being cruel when I
inflict pain.
Actually, that's not going to work. We're going to have to leave, pull my cat's tail.
Because I think there's an implied premise there between those two things. That's the point of the pain.
Okay, so that might help us to get premise two. Okay. So. God, I'm going to take this off and start again. It's now looking so. Are you having trouble with your arms there?
I'm just worried I have to hold the other one as well.
All right. Get rid of the volunteer.
I'm only being cruel if...
When I pull my cat.
I inflict pain. When I pull... Uh-huh. How's that?
Yes.
My cat's tail. I'm not sure about that.
You're not being cruel when you believe that's hell.
I am not being cruel. You know, the difficulty with doing these things on the hoof is that it all starts going wrong in the middle.
Pulling the cat still does not inflict.
Are you having trouble with your arms then?
No, I'm all right. I'll move them around if I don't need to.
Good. Okay.
It's a very heavy piece.
I'm only being cruel if I inflict pain. God wouldn't allow the innocent to suffer. Okay, so what did you come to on this? You said there is all sorts of... I mean, there's a lot of irrelevance in the... And do you remember what I said about we often explain premises as we give them? What's being explained there? What is the premise itself?
God would not allow the innocent.
Or even it's simpler than that.
My cat is innocent.
Yeah.
Do you see how that would, if we put my cat is innocent here, God would not allow the innocent to suffer, and my cat, not being an immoral agent in the first place, since she's an animal and animals are not moral agents, cannot be said to have sinned. My cat is an innocent. So I'm only being cruel when I inflict pain. My cat is innocent. We need something else here.
That's the God about God and suffering.
Yeah, you've got God doesn't allow pain.
Innocents don't suffer,
or something along those lines.
The argument doesn't say that.
No, but it does say God doesn't allow the innocent to suffer.
So how can you leave out God?
right. God doesn't allow innocence to suffer. We got that. I'm not sure we're doing so well here. My cat is innocent. God doesn't allow. I'm only being cruel if my cat suffers.
When
I pull its tail. If my cat suffers. Okay, I'm not being cruel. Well, inflicting pain is cruelty.
I don't understand it at all.
You don't understand it at all? Okay.
It means that's
not your fault.
The innocents don't suffer even if they are afflicting them, making them suffer. They don't suffer, they don't think, because they are innocent.
that's what
it is.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to find what I had myself. one I prepared. Hang on. Am I going to be able to do this? I need to find it. This is a. Yes. This is what happens when you try and do logic when you've got a cold. That's my excuse that I'm sticking to. Lecture 2, isn't it? No, we want lecture 3, not the answers 2. Right, you must promise not to look at any answer but the first one. Okay, there we go. So let me move that down so you can... You can't see. Well, no, you can't.
Too small.
It's too small, is it?
No, that's all right.
Let me get it up. And,
bigger font.
Okay, we'll make that. Is that better?
Yes.
There we go. So, I've got, pulling my cat's tail is cruel only if my cat suffers. I'm only being cruel if my cat suffers when I pull my cat's tail. So you pretty well got that. Same one. Okay, then conclusion, pulling my cat's tail is not cruel. Okay, I'm not being cruel when I pull my cat's tail. Again, you pretty well got that. So, it's premises 2 and 3, that should be. You got my cat is innocent. And premise 2 is, if my cat is innocent, she will not suffer. Okay? Do you see how that comes from the original argument? So, you identify the conclusion, you identify premise 1 and the other premises. Get rid of all the stuff about God. I'm sorry, I've taken God out of that again. Really didn't want me to do that. But here we are. Here's an explanation. I've deemed God, what he will allow, irrelevant. It's merely an explanation of why my cat won't suffer, when what's important to the argument is only that the cat won't suffer. Okay? And my cat's not being a moral agent because she's an animal is also irrelevant, because what matters is only that she's innocent. Okay?
So how can it be?
It means
if somebody is innocent, it doesn't suffer?
Now, do you remember when we were talking about arguments, we're not talking about whether the premises are true. We're only looking at what the premises are at the moment. Let me say that again. When you're identifying the argument, you're not worrying about how good the argument is. Because we analyse the argument first and then we evaluate it. Okay, so we analyse it, then evaluate. So it may be that some of the premises are false. It may be that the argument's a bad one. Ignore that. It's not relevant at this point. As a matter of fact, this argument is valid, and we'll look at that in week four. But that doesn't necessarily mean, as we'll also see in week four, that any of the premises are, all the premises are true. So I assume through making she cannot be said to have sinned into my cat is innocent, that all I'm doing is making the terms consistent.
Yes.
I'm not changing the meaning of anything. Yeah. Because I made a mistake. Can you see that I've got premise two here and premise two, which I hope I would have seen before next week, but here I am doing it this week. Okay.
Why can't you just leave out the innocent people saying my cat will not suffer, and then all the discussion about the innocence is an explanation?
Okay, pulling my cat's tail is cruel only if my cat suffers. My cat will not suffer, everything else being an explanation. Pulling my cat's tail is not cruel. You're right, you could. Yeah, well done. Do you see what was being said there?
Yes.
Actually, we can get out all this stuff about innocence and make it even simpler. Because the skeleton of the argument actually doesn't even depend on innocence, does it? All it depends on is the cat not suffering, for whatever reason the cat doesn't suffer. Thank you very much. You can keep that as a souvenir. Chris?
I would argue there is no second or third premise, because I don't think either of those are derivable from the arguments that you've put forward.
You don't think...
Either premise two or premise three can be derived from the arguments as you've put them forward.
From the argument that we have.
In other words, I don't think you can make those terms consistent.
Say that again.
I don't think you can make that. You have argued that you're making arguments, premises two and three, by making the terms consistent throughout the argument. And I think that's a dubious step.
All I've done is taken away my cat cannot be said to have sinned and changing it to my cat is innocent. Why is that not an innocence?
I don't think that's quite the same statement.
Why not? Okay, let's get them out here so that we can have a look. So I've said my cat cannot be said to have sinned, and my cat is innocent, mean the same for the purposes of this argument, and you don't think they do. Why not?
Okay, I might say that for this argument, but I think it's a generalisation. It's quite a dangerous statement to make.
I certainly agree. No, I agree that maybe for the purposes of some other purpose, they're not the same. But I think for the purposes of this argument, they are equivalent. Yeah. Another question over here.
I can see what you're saying, but I would have thought that by suppressing the God bit, you're suppressing a controversial premise, or whatever it was. Because the fact that the cat is innocent depends on all sorts of belief that God wouldn't blah 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 blah.
You're quite right that any mention of God should immediately alert you to some sort of controversy here. So I think you're absolutely right to have your interest piqued by this. But I think again it comes back to, for the purposes of this argument, what we're identifying is what is being asserted and what the reasons are being offered for it. And I think that if you have a look at that, or even the pared down argument, you really don't need to appeal to God. You need to appeal to God perhaps in order to justify one of the premises, but we're not at this point asking even whether the premises are true, never mind whether the argument's a good one. We're just asking what is the argument. So again, to go back, I mean, we're going to take this off now, and I mustn't forget my... Can I take this off?
Yes.
Yeah. Do I? Oh, no, I don't want to save them.
No.
There you are. Jolly good. I'll just try and remember to change the premise. Two to premise three. And, of course, I've got to find you another argument for next week. Actually, I'll leave that in, because here, I'm going to... You're going to need another argument, aren't you? Where will I find one? You're getting a preview.
Oh,
the online course in oh damn. It's the same argument. Okay, let me find another one. I'll tell you what, if you email me or I can get Hazel, I'll send Hazel an argument for you and she'll email it all out to you.
Yeah.
If you is there anyone not on email? Two people, three people. Okay, I'll ask Hazel to, if you could write your names down and give them to me, I'll ask Hazel to post you something for that. So you'll all have an argument for... I'll sort that out with that. Right, so, just to see where we got a bit lost there, because I got a bit... it's very difficult to think about things like that right at the end of the lecture. But what we've looked at today is analysing an argument. And the reason we've done that is because we're later in the course, starting from week four, we're going to be looking at evaluating arguments. But you can't really start evaluating arguments until you've identified arguments. And that's what we've been doing today. So when you're trying to, when you're looking at the leader of your newspaper, go home tonight, have a look at the leader of your newspaper and ask yourself, well, okay, what is the argument of this leader? What's the claim being made? What are the reasons being given for it? What's all this irrelevant guff here? Or is there another argument that I should, are there two arguments here that I need to put together? Get rid of the irrelevancies, get rid of the inconsistent terms, put in any suppressed premises. I would hope there wouldn't be any suppressed premises, but there might be. Leave out the ones that are benign, and see if you can get the argument from your newspaper. And I'm very happy, I'll send you the argument by email, but I'll also, if you want to bring in your newspaper and the analysis that you've put from that, I'll be very happy to mark that separately as well. Okay, now there's a question at the back here.
Sorry, if I could just briefly revisit the God bit.
God, yes, okay.
If you,
it's always a good idea to revisit God.
If you take out the rest of the argument about the pain and the pulling the tail and all the rest, just take the bit about the cat being innocent and innocents don't suffer. The only premise you have for the conclusion that innocents don't suffer is that God makes that so. If you take God out, what's your premises your premise for saying that innocents shouldn't or don't suffer?
You don't have one. The premise is my cat is innocent and innocents don't suffer, is that right? Innocents don't suffer.
Yeah.
Now what you're asking is what justifies my saying that that's true?
In now, that sentence, I don't mean in a
yes,
general way.
And I'm saying there is no justification because the argument itself has another separate justification. So there is another. You might say there's another argument implicit in that argument that goes, God doesn't allow the innocent to suffer. My cat is innocent, therefore my cat won't suffer.
Yes.
And it's the conclusion of that argument that's actually the premise in the argument that concerns us.
Yes. I would agree. Therefore,
yeah.
I don't know how you can take... I'm not making a religious comment. I mean, in
because,
that sentence, I don't know how you can take...
Because we're looking just for the argument for the conclusion, which was something I've completely forgotten. What was the conclusion? I'm not sure if I call my cat's tail.
Oh, I see. So you can't subdivide and say, well, what about that?
When you're analysing an argument, you look for the conclusion of that argument
right. And
the premises of that argument. And the conclusion of that argument
right. Was
I'm not being cruel if I pull my cat's tail.
Okay.
Therefore, the God is irrelevant.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's irrelevant because you truncated it at the point my cat is innocent. You decide at that point to truncate it, even though there's more information there that says my cat hasn't sinned.
people who don't say are innocent, so you can't beat it.
Do you remember in the argument about the postman and the mail being late?
Mm-hmm.
I also had in there something about the postman hates getting wet and therefore the mail. So I left out the explanation for one of the premises there because it was irrelevant to the argument that concerns us. Now, at some point, we're going to say, okay, is this a good argument? And that'll involve us asking, are the premises true? Does the conclusion follow from the premises? Now, if we become interested in the truth of the premises, we may want the argument for the premises, but we're not looking at that at the moment.
You truncated information.
Yes.
You've,
I took out what was irrelevant.
No, why is it irrelevant? Because the last point on the chain of events in there is the one where you've got a question the truth of it or not, but they're all linked together. My cat is innocent. Sinners are innocent. My cat hasn't sinned. Therefore, he's innocent. So...
okay. Let's just, I realise some people are going to have to go to catch a train or to, yes, I'm sorry, this is,
I mean, I can pick it up later.
There's nothing I can do.
Am I the only one that thinks that?
No, I don't know what you're trying to
do. Okay, I'll tell you what, we'll start next week by having a look at this again.
Yeah.
Okay, how about that?
Yeah.
That's probably the best way to do that. Okay, there's coffee and tea in the common room. Go and help yourself, I'll be in there in a minute.